It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, state agencies say they don't have additional funding to implement the voter ID law. Our next guest sees this as a deliberate attempt to make it harder to follow that law.
First, single adults now outnumber their married peers in the United States, according to data from the Bureau for Labor Statistics. That's a first, at least since the Bureau started compiling this data in 1976. Back then, only 37% of adults were single. That number's gone up to over 50%.
A scholar with the Council on Contemporary Families joins us now for a look at what's driving the change and what it means for American adults. Michelle Janning is a professor of sociology at Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So how long has this trend toward more single adults been going on?
Well, I think if you look at any trends with demographics, there are ebbs and flows throughout history. Since we've been tracking things, I think it's safe to say that the biggest noticeable trends with regard to this particular statistic have been probably since 1960 or since the 1950s, so the last several decades.
How big a deal is this tipping point, seeing more singles than married people?
I think the increase in singles and the decrease in marrieds is notable to you if you have a particular vested interest in that trend. So it kind of depends on your perspective. There are still more married people than single people. Most of the families that have children still do have married parents, but the trend is strikingly different than it used to be. So if you're wondering if people are concerned about it, it kind of depends on the perspective they have about the definition of marriage. And oftentimes, whether they view this trend as problematic or not problematic for children.
Are people making the same choices, say, to couple and maybe even to have children, but just not choosing to marry?
I think so. I think it's a little more complicated than that. I mean, why would people decide to partner up is a complex question, not just at the individual level, but at the societal level. If you were to ask somebody, why would you want to get married? Often people would say, well, it's for love and there are emotional reasons for sure. But there are a lot of structural reasons as well. For example, do I need to have stability in terms of economics in my household? Or are there eligible people that I want to marry available? So the marriage market, we call it, certainly impacts people's choice. Whether people feel like there's more or less stability if they choose to get married certainly matters. Whether people feel as if they need marriage in order to be economically independent, which is what we've seen mattering for women's lesser need to marry in order to be economically independent. In addition to that, there's a lot less stigma and a lot more normative expectation that things that used to be reserved for traditional marriages like sex and having children, those are no longer necessarily, and in fact normatively not necessarily, part of what the definition of marriage is. So you have people delaying the age of marriage, you have people intentionally choosing not to get married, you have people doing things that used to be within marriages outside of marriage. And so all of those things kind of combine together to make it seem as if marriage is declining.
Well, to look at just one of those strands, the economics of it, is it possible that the flagging economy has played a big part? People just not able to do some of the things that they would have done involving, for instance, getting married?
Maybe, although that might have more to do with the exorbitant cost of weddings than anything else. If you look at how the economy works, actually, in recession times, people end up staying married because it's more economically stable, especially for wives to stay in a relationship where there's at least one income. So economic situations may play a role in whether people stay married, but I might argue that if it's precarious, it might mean that people are more likely to stay married. And there are greater risks in divorcing if the economic situation, either nationally or for the individual people involved, especially women, is not necessarily predictable. But it is true that women's economic independence, just in general, at least among the more educated women, has impacted their desire to marry later or perhaps not marry at all.
Now, one factor people sometimes point to is this idea of delayed adulthood, or, you know, putting it another way, extended adolescence, where 20-somethings aren't seen as fully adult yet. Maybe they also don't feel as though they're fully adult. Is that something you see playing into this?
Maybe. I think, you know, what it means to be an adult or a child, for that matter, is constructed differently across time and over geographic space. We might see that young adults, and I see this in my students, have the same expectations that I think their parents have for them about adult-type decisions like career paths, getting a job, certainly finding somebody eventually for a long time partnership. But they don't necessarily have the same resources as maybe a few generations ago in terms of buying a home or something like that. And then when you add to that the delay of having children of their own, meaning that children are born to older and older parents, then you might see perhaps less of a definition of that kind of traditional definition of adulthood.
And to look at the technology aspect a bit, I mean, it's a great time to be single in a way because, A, you have incredible array of online dating options, but you also have your social network right there on your computer. You may be alone in your house, but it's really easy to connect with your friends and stay socially active without a lot of legwork.
That's true, although I think we have to be careful about who we're imagining to be single people in this discussion, because singles could include people who are doing online dating, but it also includes people who don't have access to digital technology. It includes people in older generations who are widowed or widowers. But I think the social network piece certainly gives a greater breadth of opportunity for meeting people. I'm not sure. I think the verdict is yet to be determined about whether that kind of depth of long-term relationships is working in the same way as the kind of old-fashioned face-to-face interactions that people had when they would meet each other. And, of course, if you look at online dating websites, a lot of them, and I have social science colleagues doing this, are keeping track of the success rates of marital stability for matches that happen to be made online. And I think it's very common for young people under 30, to use online dating in order to seek out relationships. But I don't think it's true necessarily that it's ubiquitous that they're seeking out marriages, per se.
Well, in terms of partnering up, is that something that do you think is still a goal for a lot of single people, or is it just too widely varied to say?
No, it is a goal. It is still the case that most people get married. And in fact, if you ask opinion polls, it is true that there's a decline in the people who say, I really do want to get married. And there's maybe an increase in the number of people who say, I'm not quite sure I want to get married. But all in all, if you look at public opinion polls, and even talking to students in my own classes, people still have a desire to have a lifetime relationship with somebody, usually in the form of marriage. So I think that is an ultimate goal. There are variations in demographics about whether that's a goal for the online dating scene or when.
So one theory I've read about that is about this trend, rather, is that people, because of online dating, it seems as though there's an infinite number of options sometimes. And so the theory goes that people are holding out longer until they get, you know, Mr. or Miss Absolute Perfect instead of close enough. What do you think about that?
I think that's true, but I think that pre-exists online dating. I think some people argue that marriage is, in fact, so strong in our society that we're idealizing it, meaning we hold the expectations of a potential partner to such high standards that there does not exist one person out there who can actually meet those standards. And so I think it's been true for a long time that people think that they'll find the perfect soulmate, and then online dating may perpetuate that need. So waiting to find the perfect person could be part of that process as well. So a kind of idealization of marriage as a partnership where one person can meet all of your needs. Of course, we know that that's a myth and it's not possible, but I think people do hold out for that for sure. And you see a lot of representation of those kinds of romantic fantasies and stories play out in media outlets a lot.
And what about, social stigma? A couple of years ago, there was a handful of books out about the single life, and some of them talked about how single people were the last class of people against whom it was okay to discriminate and get those remarks. And maybe if that's waning, maybe people are deciding, it's okay to do this for a longer amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the stigma is waning. I think about my grandmother, who came over from Germany, actually settled in Wisconsin with her husband, my grandfather. And for her, in the 1930s, there wasn't this choice of coming over as a single person, permanently settling here as an immigrant. For my mother, I think it was the same in the 1960s. The assumption was always marriage and children, and in that order. For me, growing up in the 70s and 80s, maybe a mixed bag. And for my son, who's 10, I think that there's a kind of a plethora of models out there for what it looks like to have a family. And some of those include staying single for a long time. Some of those include living with somebody, which, by the way, technically counts as being single. Some of them include marriage as well. So I think that there is definitely a decrease in the stigma of being single, and that's partly because of the trends of more people being single, but it's also a little bit of a cultural shift. I will still argue, though, that there are a lot of pressures in our media outlets and throughout socialization that being single is still not the ideal choice when people think about what it means to be an adult. So it's still not, it's not a necessarily equal choice, but it's certainly less stigmatized than it was in the past.
We're talking right now with Michelle Janning, sociology professor at Whitman College, looking at the rise of single America with new data from the Bureau for Labor Statistics showing single adults outnumber married adults for the first time.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you staying single later into your adult life than your parents? Was that a conscious decision or did it just work out that way? Is single life a solid long-term option for you? Why do you think more people are staying single, either putting off marriage or after a divorce? Do you think it's good news, bad news, or a little of both? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the rise of single adulthood in the United States with new data showing that singles outnumber married people for the first time. Our guest is Michelle Janning. She's professor of sociology at Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington, and senior scholar with the Council on Contemporary Families.
And you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Why do you think single life is on the rise? Is it a choice? Or is it an economic necessity? And how has all of that played out in your life? 800-642-1234 is our number, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we're going to go to our phone lines right now and take our first call from Dennis in Wild Rose. Hi, Dennis.
Hi there. My question to your host, or, I'm sorry, to your expert is, do you suppose that the drop in affiliation with religion or participation in religion, organized religion at least, is having any effect on the number of people who are getting married? Pew Research did a poll not too terribly long ago where it showed that the under 25 and even up to the mid 30 aged groups were becoming alarmingly non-religious, and instead of saying that they were involved with any particular religion, they claimed they were spiritual and that they hadn't been to a church or any kind of a religious organization in years.
Okay, good question, Dennis. So is this all tied in with the drive away from organized religion?
I love that question, and I thought about that a little bit. I'm not a religion scholar, so my response is based on kind of conjecture a little bit, but based on the data, what we know is that marital stability is more related not to whether somebody is or isn't religious, but whether the spouses are kind of on the same page with regard to how much religion should play a role in their relationship. If you look at the decline of people's attendance in organized religion, you could make the case that marriage and weddings, for example, are a very important public ritual where you're not just promising to be with somebody forever, but you're promising to an external audience. And that external audience for people of faith includes a higher power. And that's a really powerful thing that does end up keeping a lot of couples strengthened and together. But I think it's safe to say that kind of external support for a long-term relationship, people that are getting married would look to other places as well. And actually, it kind of depends on the religion. If you look at whether people get married or whether they stay married, there's a huge variation in those rates depending on whether they're, for example, mainline Protestant or Catholic or conservative Protestant or Jewish or Muslim, things like that. So it's a little more complex than saying if you're religious, your marriage will last longer. But I think it's safe to say that religion has performed a function for couples, at least in the past, to kind of give that external feeling of support of a community. Like I said, I think that because most people are still intending to marry and most people still do marry, I'll be anxious to see in the future if they find alternative locations to that external kind of community support.
Well, thank you to Dennis for that question, and you can join us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Want to know why you think the number of single people now outnumbers married people, and what about you in your life? Why did you choose a single life, or did you not choose it at all? Did it just happen to you? 800-642-1234 is our number, and wondering now, Michelle, whether the fact that people are living so much longer has anything to do with this. That people, you know, it's a longer stretch of coupleship than you might have expected in the past.
Right. I mean, if you think about what you're promising the day that you get married, I will stay with you until we die, that becomes a longer and longer time period the longer people live, which may suggest a little intimidation factor with needing to think about that. I'm not sure it would be necessarily a conscious decision on people's part about their decision whether to marry or not, especially when they're saying I do or not. But I think it plays a role in certainly the demographic trends. It also helps us to kind of complicate our definition of what it means to be single. Like I mentioned before, widows and widowers would be in that, people who are divorced, people who are remarrying over the life course. In social science, we call it serial monogamy. We value marriage so much that people get married over and, and over and over again. And certainly the expanding life course would help facilitate that sort of multiple partnerships. But again, does that mean that marriage is on the decline, or does it mean that people are seeing it as a shorter-term thing? I'm not sure, or valuing it.
Well, right, people move in and out of coupleship before they get married, but then people who are married may get divorced. So is this maybe not the best measure of whether people are you know, engaging in partnerships?
Do you mean marriage as a measure?
Right, marriage versus, you know, being partnered with someone without the marriage certificate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what a lot of people who are espousing a more non-traditional route to couplehood would suggest in some ways, that why do you need that kind of legal sanction? Why is it possible, or why couldn't it be possible for us to have this kind of mutual commitment without that external audience? The problem that people run into with that is that there are a lot of legal benefits to marriage. It is still a classification. You see this with arguments for same-sex marriage. It's a classification that has with it benefits economically and socially. So in our definition of it's a couple's world, the default is still, I think, culturally, economically, legally, and socially, that means married couples. So, yeah, I mean, would I question the use of marriage as a good indicator for whether people should or are staying together or not? Possibly, but do I think people are still using that as the measure? Absolutely.
Let's take another call now. We've got Teresa joining us from Beaver Dam. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for the subject matter, and thank you to your guest. In response to one of the comments, my sons are in their 30s, and a lot of their friends are, and I'm finding that this is a phenomenon that seems to be pretty prevalent throughout their with all their friends. And I've been asking them what's going on, and the answer always is the same thing. They're saying the girls, the ladies, don't want to get married. They do not want to repeat what their mothers, their grandmothers, and before that, they don't want to repeat that. And they want to have more control over their life. They want to have more control over the decisions in their life, whether they work, whether they have families. And I found that very interesting that there's that turn.
Yeah, very interesting, Teresa. Thanks for bringing that up. That reminds me of Hannah Rosen's recent book, The End of Men, where she sort of posited that women were sort of done with men, realized they didn't need them, and were doing everything you could do in terms of being a partner with someone and having children only without men. Is there part of that there that you think applies here?
Well, I would hate to think that the end of men is the answer. I think, in fact, it's the opposite, right? With that men and women participate importantly in dialogue with each other about the changing roles that both of them are undergoing. So it is the case that that your son's response is to what women want. But I think there's also things going on about what men might want as well and what men might be offering. For the women that they're talking about, avoiding what their mothers went through, I think that might be an interesting indicator of trying to distance themselves from what they view as a pretty traditional breadwinner homemaker model, where they might have seen their mothers doing things that they don't see themselves doing or wanting to do in the future. And they may then be associating marriage with those roles. And what we know, of course, is that there's a lot of variation in types of relationships, in heterosexual relationships in particular, about what men and women do. Just because you're married doesn't mean that you're a traditional wife. But it's very easy to go to that kind of location in our minds when we think, what does it mean to be married? I remember when I got married, my first year, I really struggled with the whole, what does it mean to be a wife? That bothered me, and there was absolutely nothing that was going on in my actual relationship that would have made me feel like that. It was this very powerful kind of cultural pressure of what it means to be a wife and what it means to a husband. So despite changing trends and egalitarian roles and lots of models, you still have men and women adhering to these kind of ideal types as what they either do or don't want to avoid. I'm wondering if that might be happening with your son.
Well, thanks a lot for the call, Teresa. And Michelle, thank you to you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Michelle Janning, professor of sociology at Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington, and senior scholar with the Council on Contemporary Families. We've been talking about new data showing singles outnumber married people in the U.S. for the first time in history.